Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 78 for October 10th, 2008, Microsoft's Strata. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/windows. And by GoToMeeting, online meetings made easy. For a free 30-day trial of GoToMeeting for your PC or Mac, visit GoToMeeting.com/WindowsWeekly. It's time for Windows Weekly, live from beautiful Dedham, Massachusetts, the sun and fun capital of Western Massachusetts. It's
Eastern.
Eastern. It's Paul Thurrott.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Paul. Paul is the man in charge of the Supersite for Windows at winsupersite.com, a great site if you're interested in Windows news and how-tos and all sorts of great stuff. Also, the author of the brand new Windows Vista Secrets just came out, a second edition, covering SP1 from Wiley & Sons. And news editor at Windows IT Pro joins us every week to talk about Windows, Zune, Server, Xbox.
Stuff.
Mesh. Live mesh.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Paul.
What was that? Sign language? What were you doing there?
I was counting the ways that
counting this the like subjects. We're Windows, like stormtroopers giving mesh. Each other. You know,
yeah, we have the high sign. The book is out, and are you? You were talking about a giveaway last time. Did you decide on what to do?
Yeah, and I have not decided what to do completely. But what has occurred to me is I'd like to give away copies of the book first to people who listen to the podcast, and I'd like to give away copies to people who follow me on Twitter, and then I want to do some sort of general giveaway on the site. So Wiley has sent me four boxes of these things, which, you know, are thick enough to provide a foundation for the addition to my home. But the problem is, you know, how do I do this, right? So if I tell people to email me, all I'm going to do is get hundreds of email, and that's terrible. So tell me what you think of this one. I was thinking of, for this initial round here, maybe, you know, 10 copies to people who are listening to the podcast. Set it for a certain date and time for maybe a 15-minute window.
Okay.
You know, if the email falls outside of that window, it doesn't count.
Okay.
Right?
Which so they, like, have to sit at their mail and just ready to push the button.
But then I will... No, they don't have to be first. I will randomly select 10 people who email me during that window.
And what will the window be?
I'm thinking it will be Sunday, October 12th.
Okay.
From 10 a.m. to 10:15 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, so my time.
Eastern Daylight. We're still in daylight.
Okay. So, well, whatever it is. Yeah, so I guess we will be on that day as well. It's only for the U.S. I apologize for that. I'm going to be mailing these out myself, so I can't really afford to send them to places outside of the U.S., although I think in the future we'll have the publishing company do some of that stuff
as well. If a foreigner wants to come to your house,
yes,
and pick it up, is that okay?
Absolutely. They can have coffee.
Or tea.
We're having tea today. But, yeah.
All right, good. So
I'll sign them if they like. You know, I'll.
You're actually inviting people to your home? Are you?
Sure, why not? Let's have a block party.
Are you sure you want to do that? Why not? Good. All right, that sounds good. So at 10 a.m.
That makes sense? You think that makes sense?
Yes, I think it's good because only people listening to the podcast will know this. Mm-hmm. And you could Twitter it, and then that would be just podcast.
No, no, I'll do that later.
You do another one. Okay, good.
I'll do another one for Twitter.
So if they don't win this one, they should follow you on Twitter so that they'll see when you post on Twitter that we're going to do this. So what's your Twitter handle?
It's Thurrott, my last name.
Thurrott. Okay.
And if that doesn't work out, I'm going to be doing it from the website as well. So I'll be giving away books from the website later in the month.
I think this is good. I like this technique.
Okay.
I wish I'd thought of it.
I just don't. I'm sure there are automated ways to do this. I just don't want to get a million emails that I then have to respond to and say, "Hey, sorry, you know, you didn't get it. Sorry about that."
No, I think this is great. And if you don't, so you're not going to send "I'm a sorry" emails. If you don't hear from Paul,
I think
you didn't
that
win.
Should be the and sorry, I'll just say sorry now. You know, sorry, I can't do that.
you lose.
I spend much of my time apologizing, as it turns out.
Yeah, I know how that feels
as a man. You know, yeah. Yes. If you win, I will contact you. If you don't, you know, look for it on Twitter next, and then on the super site for Windows after that.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. I think that's a very good idea. So if you're listening to this podcast and it's not yet Sunday, which it encourages you to listen to the podcast right away. Don't wait.
Yeah. So that's what's going to happen. Someone will listen on the way to work on Monday. Sorry.
Sunday, October 12th, 10 a.m. to 10:15 Eastern time. Send Paul an email to.
Oh, right. That's the secret.
Oh, if you don't know the email.
My email address is my last name again. Thurrott. @gmail.com.
Okay, you're a brave soul giving that out.
Well, hey, everyone already has it, so.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of easy to figure out. Yeah. So there you go. Excellent. I think that's a great idea. And how many are you going to give away?
On Sunday, I'll give away 10. I'll give away 10 more from Twitter, probably a week after that. And then at least 10 or 20 after that via the site. So I could probably give these things away for the rest of the year. I think the
you have
publishing
enough.
Company has, they promised to send more as well. So,
oh, that's nice of them.
Yeah.
That's great.
And I think I need to talk to them about international because they had asked me about shipping stuff internationally. And, you know,
we have so many international, fully 30% of our audience is outside the U.S.
Sure.
And I really, you know, I've kind of made the commitment when we do UGM that we'll absorb the cost. And that's going to be significant because that's a tariff we have to pay.
Well, this book is humongous, too. That's the other problem. It's like mailing a Volkswagen, you know.
All right. Good. Very nice.
Maybe we can figure something out if people want to pay to have it shipped and they live outside the United States. I don't know. But for this round, let's just do U.S. only podcast listeners. And
fair enough.
We'll work from there.
So before we coming up, we're going to talk about something called strata. What could that be? Think about cumulus. Stratocumulus, cumulonimbus. What do these all have in common? Also, Hyper-V. We're going to talk about Android a little bit. New Xbox experience coming. All of that is ahead. But first, it's time to mention our friends at GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is a great company that does, I think, a fantastic product. And I'm really glad that they're kind of along for the ride. I've been advertising their products now for, I think, 4 years. GoToMeeting, well, let me explain what it is, if you haven't tried it before, is a product that lets you do online meetings. So you've seen these before. Microsoft even has its own product. But let me tell you, it's worth getting GoToMeeting because it's fast, it's effective, and it's really easy for your clients. And one of the problems with some of these other solutions is you got to get your clients to jump through hoops for these online meetings. That's not going to work, especially if it's a sales meeting or it's somebody you don't know that well. It should be easy. With GoToMeeting, it couldn't be easier. It takes you 2 minutes to install it in your system. It's hooked into Outlook, so you can send a message right away in Outlook. Or even if you're on the, you know, you're on a conference call, you're talking to a client, you're saying, you know, I'd like to show you something. Can I show you my PowerPoint? And he says, yeah, but you're 4,000 miles away. How? Do me a favor. Go to GoToMeeting.com. So your client goes, you know, tap, 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 GoToMeeting.com. And then you give him the meeting ID 178943 or whatever it is. He enters that in. All of a sudden, he says, oh, there's the PowerPoint. There's your screen. Yeah, that's me. You could chat back and forth. They have VoIP built into it. Works on Mac and PC. So even if your client's a Mac user, no big deal. And it's fast. It's efficient. It's very quick. I'll tell you, you close more deals. It's great for collaboration, great for training. And right now, free for a month because they want you to try it. They want you to get the idea of what GoToMeeting can do for you. So if you go to GoToMeeting.com/WindowsWeekly. I think I have that wrong on the screen. Let me get that fixed. GoToMeeting.com/WindowsWeekly. And if you go right there right now, you'll see, you just click a couple of the mouse clicks and you've got 1 month free. Unlimited meetings as long as you want, as often as you want. I encourage you to try it with all sorts of people. Even try it with some, you know, clients or people you don't know that well. I guarantee you they're going to say, wow, this is great. This is cool. It's really engaging. GoToMeeting.com/WindowsWeekly. We thank them so much for their support. Of Windows Weekly. So, Paul, it's called Strata. What the hell is it?
We think it is.
Oh, that's a guess? Remember, that's like a rumor?
Well, Well, it's not so much a rumor. It's something that Microsoft put up on their PDC site and then took down almost immediately, I think, realizing they had made the mistake. And last week, Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer was in Europe, and he was talking maybe a little bit too much about a bunch of things. He talked about this Cloud OS platform that we discussed last week, and the new version of Office Live, and some other things. And remember, he said at the time that we'll call it Windows Cloud OS for now, but that we'll announce the name, you know, down the road at PDC. And I think the name might, in fact, be Windows Strata.
You know, Strata would kind of make sense because of stratocumulus clouds, but more because it's layers, right?
Right.
That's what Strata means. And all of these, all of these products are layers anyway, right?
Sure. I think a platform or from an API standpoint,
right.
Layers.
And you have application layer, you have the underlying protocols. Mm-hmm. There's layers all the way down.
One of the big pieces of confusion around all this stuff, of course, is that Microsoft has been talking about Live Mesh all year.
Right.
I get a lot of emails every day from people who say, okay, now they've talked about this Cloud OS thing. Well, how does that, is that Live Mesh? How, if, if not, does it run on Live Mesh? Does Live Mesh run on that? I mean, how do they interact or interoperate? And I think, and this is a little bit of an educated guess, Live Mesh will probably be renamed to something called Live Framework. And the understanding here is that it will most likely run on top of Strata, that Strata is the lower layer, if you will, the actual, what we think of as the OS, and Live Mesh is a platform that runs on top of that OS.
I think that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
So Mesh, it, when you think about Mesh, it, just the word Mesh, you know, what it might mean, and the way that Microsoft uses it within the context of Live Mesh, that you have a mesh of PCs and devices which you're syncing together, you know, that Mesh might be the synchronization platform that runs on top of Windows Strata. And when you think of it in that light, it actually seems to make some sense.
Yeah. Mesh on top of Strata.
Mm-hmm.
And so you think that they're going to call, Strata will refer to the everything, the generic thing, or it will be just the underlying technology?
I think both. You know, I mean, in I think it's probably
Windows Strata, and then Live Mesh will be the top layer, the application layer on top of Strata.
It'll be one, I think, one of the layers on top of it.
Right.
I think this will be the sync platform. That's how I would put it.
Okay.
And actually, we talked about Folder Share becoming Windows Live Sync, and how that will essentially replace the end user functionality that we get in Live Mesh now around syncing. So Live Mesh is the, I'm sorry, see, it's easy to get confused here. Windows Live Sync, a.k.a. Folder Share, would be the end user applications / service that runs on the Live Mesh or Live Framework platform, which is a part of the wider Cloud OS called Windows Strata.
Okay.
That is how I understand it.
That makes a lot of sense. And so this was, the page that they put up at the PDC site just said Strata?
What was listed under it were all of their, what they call cloud computing sessions. And then they quickly took it away.
Uh-huh.
The other reason this makes a lot of sense is think about the way Microsoft operates, right? They are kind of a top-heavy organization. You know, if Apple, for example, to use the obvious example, were going to come in and create some sync services, they would just create something called iSync, you know.
Right.
Or later on, they'd just do this Mobile Me thing. You know, Apple doesn't think, okay, we want to do this thing. Let's start at the back end and really build it up and go crazy. They just build it.
Right.
Microsoft, you know, does things in a slightly more, like I said, top-heavy fashion. So when you think about the many different layers we already know about and the likelihood that there will be far more by the time PDC occurs, this sounds exactly like a Microsoft product, you know, in that sense. It's a kind of a traditional Microsoft product, but running up in the cloud.
Good. Well, that's exciting. PDC is when?
It starts on October 26th, I think, which is a Sunday.
Soon.
October 27th, really, you know, is the keynote. Yeah. Yeah, it's two weeks.
Will you be back in time to do Windows Weekly that Thursday or Friday?
I'm coming home on Thursday, so we'll probably have to do it on Friday that week.
That's the day we release it, but that's good. So we will have coverage of the PDC on our, I guess it'll be our Halloween edition of Windows Weekly.
Scary.
Yeah, scary. That's exciting. I'm really excited about that.
Because
I think this is going to be a big... Well, first of all, they'd only do it when they have something really big. It was 4 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, 3 years ago was the last one, and then 7 years ago, 5 years, I don't know, 5 years ago, I guess. This is going to be a big one, no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Good. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Jerry Pornell is going to be there. I mentioned this before, and we're going to probably do a special twit that Sunday. So I plan on that, being on that too as well, so we could talk about PDC and what's new. People say I only cover the Apple announcements. I just want to show them. We will cover the Windows announcements too. We are going to cover the, you know, Apple just announced yesterday. They announced that they're having an event on Tuesday. And I think it's those new notebooks. And I think the rumor mill, which has been pretty accurate lately, is predicting of, I think, 7 new notebooks, 3 MacBooks, 2 MacBook Pros, 2 Airs. I'm carved going to, out of a brick of aluminum.
Carved out of a brick.
Yeah. You think that's possible? Does anybody do that on anybody else?
A single piece. I have to be honest. I mean, I'm not even clear that carving it out of a single piece of anything makes a lot of sense. This is sort of a typical Apple thing, isn't it?
No screws.
Do it because we can. Yeah. Why did you do it? Because we could.
Because we could. Yeah, it is a typical. It's exactly.
It's going to be more durable because right now people are snapping their MacBooks in half by mistake when they pick them up.
Well, you have to. Well, I mean, there have to be some screws. You have to be able to get into the darn thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. It's intriguing. Anyway,
it is intriguing. Yeah. And if they're interesting enough, I'll grab one. I bought a MacBook this summer.
You'll grab it and do what you did with that one, which is run Vista on it.
Yeah, but I'll get rid of this one and. Yeah. Yeah. Get it. Sure. You all right there? You look like you're.
I'm bouncing.
Are you on a ball?
I'm on a ball.
Oh, you are. Okay.
Yeah, I couldn't do this in a chair.
That would have been weird otherwise.
People who are watching at home, just in case you don't know, we record this live in front of a live studio audience at live.twit.tv every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific, which is 2 p.m. Eastern. And so people at home, and Paul can see me and I can see him, and people at home can see me bouncing. I just do that, you know, it's just, I like to be a little more mobile.
Sure.
Do you sit in a regular chair or do you have one of those knee chairs? You look like you could be kneeling right now.
Right. I have an Aeron chair that I've had for years.
Is that
my wife's on a ball.
Really?
And yeah, I think about that sometimes.
I really like it. I spend 7 hours a day sitting here.
Sure.
And it's nice to have something that kind of moves around, so it keeps me from getting too settled.
So you have rock hard abs? Is that how this works?
Rock hard ass, yes.
Okay. Right. That's why I have to go to the gym, because I sit here all day in front of the computer.
Yeah, but you and I both work out a lot, and I think that's nerds need to do that. So how do you like the Aeron chair? Is that good? I've always wondered. I've never had an Aeron.
It's fine. You can't see it probably in the video, but I snapped off one of the arms recently, and it's going to require a piece replacement, so I've decided just to leave it alone.
Aeron surgery is extremely expensive.
Yeah, I've had it for a long time. I mean,
it'd be cheaper to get your arm removed than to get a new arm in your chair.
Yes, yeah. Actually, and have it attached to the chair.
Yes. So it's
like a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
How's that Hyper-V? Last week we talked about the idea that you were going to get one massive Dell computer, a Quad Xeon, and you were going to put Hyper-V on it, the new Windows virtual machine, and you were going to put like every server version known to man on that thing. Did you start that yet?
I'm along the way. Yeah.
You are.
It's not a Quad Xeon, by the way. It's a quad core Core 2 Duo chip, so it's a quad core.
Oh, okay.
Chip, but it's a workstation class machine, but it's being used as a server.
Right.
Yeah. What I've discovered this week doing this stuff is I first installed Microsoft Hyper-V Server, which is that standalone version, and then I later went back to Windows Server 2008 because Hyper-V is horribly broken, and I am.
Oh really?
I am really freaked out by how bad this is.
Oh no.
And this is a conversation I'm going to have with Microsoft at some point. But you would assume with a product such as this that you install it and you do things with it and you kind of move on with life. And if you run into problems, there's some kind of documentation that will explain to you how to get stuff working.
Yeah.
But as it turns out with Hyper-V, and this is also true, unfortunately, of the Hyper-V role on Windows Server 2008. If you want to do things remotely, if you want to hit this thing with what they call the Hyper-V Manager console from a Windows Vista PC, which one might want to do with a server, rather than sit in front of it, almost impossible to get this thing working. And the process you have to go through, which is too painful for me to describe here because we would all be asleep by the time it was done, is not documented anywhere. In fact, to find out how to make it work, I had, obviously like anyone else, I searched for error messages on the web. And what I found is that a guy in the Hyper-V team documented on his blog the workarounds to making this stuff work.
Oh. Well, yeah, we blogged it.
It's unbelievable.
Oh, I mean, and they've known about this for months.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's why it's infuriating. And it's just stuff like that that drives me crazy.
So what's wrong? What's not working?
What's not working? Well, nothing's working, Leo. I mean,
that's a good start.
Out of the box. I mean, out of the box. You know, Hyper-V, there's no box. It's a free product you download from the web. But, out of the download, I guess, you install Hyper-V server on this thing. You reboot into this text mode environment that allows you to do very simple things like, set the domain name or the work group, add an administrator, set up remote access, which is what you really have to do because you can't do anything sitting in front of it. You can't install virtual machines. So you install remote access. You can access the thing remotely from, let's say Vista using remote desktop. And then you want to go in and that doesn't do anything either because that gives you the command line environment. So you want to access it remotely with Hyper-V Manager, which is the GUI. And this is the GUI that allows you to do things like install virtual machines. And that doesn't work. You have to figure out all these workarounds to make that work. And it's infuriating. The sheer number of steps you have to go through on both the server and the client to make this thing finally connect and then allow you to install virtual machines, which I believe is the purpose of the product, is astonishing. And it's the types of things that should happen during install, right? It's almost like you didn't run install, but then you decided to go into the system and hack everything to make it look, to make it do the things that install should have done in the first place. Really, really silly.
So you're going to you've abandoned it. I mean, it is free.
I did it. So what I did was I got it to work. I did it. It's okay. Free. Yeah. So for people who don't have Windows Server 2008, I wanted to at least try it. And I did do it. I got virtual machines up and running in the thing. But I eventually decided, Windows Server 2008, the full product, does everything that Hyper-V does and more. It would be advantageous to have that thing on there because there are going to be those times when it just, for convenience sake, you can turn on the monitor, log in with the keyboard, and sit at the server and actually do something with it, which is not possible with the standalone Hyper-V. So the way that works is you install Windows Server 2008. And then you install the Hyper-V role, which adds that Hyper-V component. And you could do other stuff from there. You can install the web server. I did that. I installed the web server. You could can create a domain or log on to a domain. You could do other things. But then from then on, what I did was I just worked with the virtual machine. So I actually have, I'd have to go look at it, but probably today, 7 virtual machines are all running simultaneously. There's an entire small business server environment running up there in its own domain. There's a couple of other server OSs. I'm doing something with the Boston user group in a couple of weeks, so I've been testing some stuff for that. And, Vista clients, some that run on the domain and some that don't. And, there's all kinds of cool stuff you can do. So this is sort of a multi-month process, but right now it is up and running. But again, going to Windows Server 2008 doesn't solve any of the problems. All those remote access problems, all those weird fixes you have to go in and make, still have to do. I challenge anybody to go to Microsoft.com and find the steps it would take to actually get this thing to connect and work so that if you were running Windows Vista in a domain or not, hitting Windows Server 2008 with Hyper-V or Hyper-V and just have it work. Like imagine running setup on Vista and then connecting to the server and actually having it work. Wouldn't that be something?
Now, VMware is free. Does it do exactly the same thing?
Well,
it works.
It does. Yeah, sure. But it works. Yeah, sure.
That would be the difference.
this is a great 1.0 product, Leo, let me tell you.
You're kind of kicking yourself from not using VMware right about now.
I got to use this stuff.
You have to. And I'm sure
it is working fine now.
That your input is going to help Microsoft make this a better product.
No, what's going to listen, if these guys handle, I just talked to this guy from the Windows client team without giving any names, but I told him about an experience I had, which drives me crazy, which is when I'll write about something and I'll say, this thing just doesn't work. And then the product team will get back to me and say, well, could you document, what are you talking about? And in the case of something like Internet Explorer 8, which just doesn't work, it's a little infuriating because all you have to do is open the thing, browse the website, and see how it doesn't work. There's not a lot of testing to do here. It just doesn't work. And Hyper-V is like this. Like if I get one of those calls, seriously, you're telling me that there are people that have just gotten this to work, really? I mentioned Rafael Rivera, who's going to work with me on the next edition of the book, also brought this exact machine to do very similar things. And he's been instant messaging me all day today.
Oh, man.
Because he can't get it.
So you don't think it's something strange about your setup or your system or your hardware? I mean...
Oh, no, because when you browse, it's how it is when you browse a problem online.
Everybody's saying it.
Oh, all of a sudden you're in a giant support group because you're not alone. This is people are having the exact same problem.
I don't get how a company could ship a product that doesn't work. Like that somebody in the building didn't say, sure, well, before we put this out, let me install it and just see if it does what it's supposed to do. So I have to think it works for somebody.
No, I don't think it does.
then that's mind-boggling.
Yeah, I don't think it does. There's a lot of work to be done to make this thing work. Yeah,
it's kind of stunning that you could ship a product that doesn't work.
You know what this is? This is like the Linux test. This is, if you don't have what it takes to make this thing work, you don't deserve to run it, Leo. You shouldn't be playing with it. So I feel like I've crossed that divide.
It really is. That's kind of the attitude. Well, yeah. If you can't figure out how to use apt-get, then really I can't help you.
You can't even say RTFM in this case, because you can read that thing all you want. It doesn't mention any of the problems.
It's RTFB.
Have.
Read the blog.
Read what should happen when you install this thing, is what this book is about.
So I take it you're not really recommending people rush out and download Hyper-V.
I guess what I'm saying is this is a complex product. It's aimed at a certain part of the market, right? It's aimed at businesses and so forth. I mean, if you are an IT administrator, you probably have the technical acumen required to make this thing work. But it's not ready for, I shouldn't say prime time. It's not ready for a typical enthusiast, let alone, it's not designed for consumers. It's a server product.
Once you get it going, it works well. It's fast and all that. Yeah. In fact, I think the early tests are that it's faster, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's yes. I can hit it from all my PCs now. Hyper-V Manager works fantastic. I can remote desktop, and that's no big deal.
So it's worth getting it working.
Sure. I mean, I think if you're a Windows shop and you have Windows Server 2008, that is the superior way to go rather than Hyper-V. And it's not just the cost of the thing. It's that Windows Server 2008 has additional capabilities. There's also three levels to Windows Server 2008 now when you think about it, because there's the full GUI install, the normal, what we think of as Windows Server. There's the server core install, which is a reduced set of roles, also only with a command line environment. And then the last one down is just Hyper-V. And Hyper-V is one role. It just does virtualization. Although, again, out of the box, it doesn't actually do anything, which I find vaguely humorous. Although, given the many problems I've had over the past week, I guess I'm not laughing too much, but it is, it's interesting, yeah, that they've created a very special special case version of Windows Server here, I guess.
So,
trying to think of something positive to say there.
Yeah, no, well, I can think of one thing that's not exactly positive, but I can think of another product that had a similar aspect to it, which is Apple's Back to My Mac, which nobody I know ever got working in its first iteration, but it worked sometimes. So,
it's not quite analogous. It does work, right? Let's be fair. I mean, it does work.
Okay.
And Windows Server 2008 with Hyper-V has been out for a little while. Hyper-V standalone is sort of a new animal. I think if you were coming into this world with a background in Hyper-V running on Windows Server 2008, you'd probably find it a little more manageable than, say, I have. But yeah, like I said, I mean, the problem is you can't actually look in their documentation and discover
what's wrong.
You have to get online and look it up.
Right.
It's ridiculous. I'll write about it. I just can't believe it. I can't believe it's really this way. But it is.
There you go. Moving right along. Let's talk about Android. I ordered one, and now I'm starting to see a lot of videos on the Storm, and I'm wondering. See, I have T-Mobile and I have Verizon, so I could go either way. But
Verizon obviously has the better network.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think that Android over the long haul is going to be the way to go, because A, there are going to be so many different phones. They'll be on all the networks.
Yeah.
Different form factors, different capabilities. But this thing is completely open, and
what I like about it.
Every time I think about leaving the iPhone, right? And I have to say, I don't want to call it a daily struggle, but it is something I think about a lot. The thing that keeps me on the iPhone isn't the interface. It's not the form factor. It's not the iPod stuff, which, frankly, on a phone, you don't want to play with too much, because let's face it, the battery only goes 15 minutes now.
Right.
It's the App Store, right? It's the availability of these third-party apps. I have so many applications on this phone now, it's almost ridiculous. It's almost unmanageable. But there are so many high-quality applications already. And this thing's only been around for, 4 months, whatever.
Yeah, and there's thousands. I mean, literally, I think well over 1,000, several thousand applications.
Some of them are just fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of tipped calculators, but there is some amazing stuff. There's X.
As there would be.
Yeah.
Hey, this is a flashlight app.
There's more than one.
Good stuff.
So I like the apps, and that's what I'm hoping to see the same thing on Android. I really am.
Oh, there's no way you won't. There's no doubt that the biggest benefit of Android is going to be this openness, because it's not going to just be the sort of the App Store type stuff. It's, you know, even right out of the bat, I mean, there's an emulator online, which I use to take shots.
It's cool, isn't it?
Yeah. Really neat. It lets you play with most of the phone. And one of the things you'll see in there, and this is something you'd never see on an Apple product, for example, iPhone specifically, is, you know, you go into the chat application and there's at least 4 instant messaging clients in there, including Yahoo and Microsoft and Google and, you know, and AOL.
Yes.
And, you know, Apple's is Apple's.
Apple doesn't work. They, you know, there are some third-party IM clients. They don't work.
No.
And chiefly, well, they work okay, but the chief problem I see is there's no background processes on the iPhone. Now, this is the interesting trade-off. On Google Android, do anything you want. Run in the background, fine. No problem. It's open.
Sure.
On the other hand, Apple's saying, well, we don't want stuff to run in the background because it's not going to be as stable. And and they have, there's some merit in that as well. So I think that, that's, it's two different users. It's one user who just wants kind of this clean interface, this simplicity, stability, and isn't looking for ultimate functionality. And then there's people like you and me who are really going to be Android fans, I think. What do you think of the Storm, though? You think
the Storm looks beautiful. But I will say this. The one thing that I and I've been looking, I don't see any mention of, you know, is there going to be some kind of a platform under here that people can write apps to very easily that's open? And
well, there traditionally there is on the BlackBerry OS.
I know there is, but, you know, it's not the same level. Look, there's Microsoft talks about 18,000 applications on Windows Mobile. Do you want to run any of these things? I mean, have you looked at them?
Right.
You know, the availability of applications isn't enough, you know. Windows Mobile has been around for a long time. There are a lot of applications that run on that. The platform itself isn't very exciting. BlackBerry,
they announced yesterday developers' tools for
I think
Storm.
They felt obligated to, right? I mean,
yeah.
This is like a PowerPoint checkbox for them. You know, something they can say, "Hey, look, we're doing this too." But
and they're both written in Java. Both Java, you know, and that's the interesting thing. Yeah. If you're a Java programmer, it may be possible to write for both the Storm and Android. Storm may benefit from that.
Well, again, not to be the cloud of death as usual, but if you've ever run like the Java-based Gmail client on Windows Mobile,
I know.
It's a piece of crap.
I'm a big fan
not
of
very
Java.
Good. So I don't know. But the form factor of the Storm is very interesting. And when you hear that RIM is going to make a touchscreen device, of course, your first reaction is, oh, great. You know, a Me Too device, just what we need. You know, we need a BlackBerry that's not really a BlackBerry. But I guess it has that. That's, you know, spring underpinning, so you've got feedback as you tap the
haptic
screen.
The haptic feedback,
and that's the one thing that's really missing on the iPhone. You really have to look at that thing to make sure you're hitting the right keys, because if you don't, you know, you can't. A lot of people can sit there and they can but they can do other things.
It'll be a serious competitor for the iPhone, but because it doesn't have a keyboard, I think a lot of BlackBerry users are not going to be too happy with it, because that's why you buy a BlackBerry, right?
Yeah, but I think that's the point, right? In other words, they're trying to bring people who aren't considering the Black to that platform, and this is one way to do it. To sort of out-cool Apple and say, hey, we do the touch thing too. You know, it's an option. I mean, I think there are a lot of people in the corporate world especially who have seen the Apple ads and have gone to their companies and said, hey, what the heck? We can get an iPhone. You know, it does exchange now. Let's go. And maybe this will keep them on BlackBerry. And I think that's really the point of it, just to not so much for the traditional BlackBerry users, but the people who maybe are swayed by Apple and or would not have considered a BlackBerry before.
I think that what you're really going to see, first of all, it's great, right? The bottom line is, this is great. There's competition, there's variety, there's innovation. People like us who want our phone to be more than just a phone, who want them to be small computers, are going to win in the long run, because we'll have choice. Right. Where does Windows Mobile stand, though?
I know. Well, so again, the conversation I had recently with the Windows guys, he asked me what I thought about different things and kind of touched on Windows Mobile. And I said, well, Windows Mobile is a piece of junk. And then he's like, whoa, hold on. What are you talking about? And I said, well, do you have one of the new 6.1 devices? And I said, yeah, I do. He said, what do you think about that? And I said, it's utilitarian. And he was really taken aback by this. And I said, listen, you got to be kidding me. I mean, have you ever even picked up an iPhone? They're not comparable in any way, shape, or form. They're not the same thing. I think going forward, the four big platforms will include Windows Mobile, RIM, iPhone, and I forget, and Android for smartphones. A company like Nokia, which is humongous in traditional phones, probably will get in there as well. We'll see what they do.
I mean, they have, you know, that S60 is a very capable operating system.
Okay.
There's
no reason
they couldn't do something, yeah.
But I think over time, it makes sense that these things are going to be whittled down. And I would say, honestly, of the newer platforms, when you look at things like the iPhone and Android, which is very exciting, the BlackBerry Storm, which is interesting. We don't know enough about it yet, but it's at least exciting. And I think people really, I mean, out of the box, people are very, views are positive. People are very interested in it.
Yeah.
You know, isn't Windows Mobile the least interesting of these?
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
I mean, by far.
I'm thinking, you know, Windows Mobile is now kind of where the Palm OS.
Yeah, well, you noticed that in
That pinnacle that Palm OS used to sit at as the also ran.
Yeah. Remember when these guys were cool?
Yeah.
These guys were never cool, Leo. But
I think Windows Mobile, for a time, was the you know, smart phone.
I'm not even sure if that's true. You know, I mean, I think they were. I think it was more like expected that they would become this big deal. And I think because it's from Microsoft, they've reached a certain portion of the market. But it's hard because I've talked a lot recently with you about wanting to be more Microsoft focused and try to look more closely at Microsoft specific things, even when I might have gone in a different direction. And I got to tell you, the one weak link in this entire chain, I can look at all the stuff they do on the desktop, up on the web with the different services and the integration and everything. The weak link in this whole plan is mobile. Windows Mobile, it is a disaster for that reason. Not because it doesn't work. It works fine. It's fine. But being fine isn't enough anymore. And it is so subpar compared to the other things that are out and coming out now. I have no interest in it at all. It really kills me.
What would you do if you were Microsoft to save this platform?
I would start from scratch. Yeah. Well, that's almost a silly thing to say in some ways. I think the underlying platform is fine. It's the user experience that stinks. And I think I would actually give them the same advice that I gave to the Windows client guys, which is you need to have different interfaces for consumers and for business users. You know, maybe this thing that is Windows Mobile today is fine for businesses. I actually don't think that it is, by the way, but maybe it is. Let's pretend it is. You got to do something more exciting for individuals. And you'll see that in the Windows Mobile ecosystem. There are certain phones where a phone set maker or a wireless carrier, whoever, will actually write this shell that kind of runs on top of Windows Mobile and tries to hide this stuff.
Right.
And some of those are
It's not mobile.
Successful.
It's not Windows, really.
Yeah. Oh, don't click on that icon. No, what is this thing?
No.
So, you know, they're successful to some degree, but eventually you get under there and it's sort of like media center is on the PC. 90% of the time, maybe it's fine, but every once in a while this dialogue pops up and you're like, what the heck is this? And it doesn't look like anything else in the interface because it's Windows.
Yeah.
That's kind of what those things are like for Windows Mobile.
So Dennis Beattie's asking in the chat room, what about Windows Mobile 7? Is Zune integration maybe a Zune phone?
Okay. So,
I mean,
if
you're going to copy Apple, why not go all the way?
All right. So they've talked about that. Windows Mobile 7 has been delayed 6 months. So the very earliest it's going to come out now is the second half of next year, meaning that the phones we'll see based on that system won't come out until the first half of the year after that.
Okay.
Which to me is so far in the future, it's not even worth discussing. But and I don't mean to be cynical. I really like the Zune platform. I like what they've done a lot. I'm still in the middle of reviewing it, but it's a solid platform. You know, the players are great. The software is fantastic. The services are great. But, you know, they only have 3% of the market. And integrating their media player into a phone isn't going to change this picture in the slightest. Sorry. You know, it's not going to make Windows Mobile instantly a better platform, and it's certainly not going to do much. I mean, I guess it may expand the potential eyeballs for Windows or for Zune, I guess, but I don't know. You know, they give away the software for free on the PC already. What's the big, I don't know. I just don't see it as a game changer.
You have, which phone? Your 6.1 phone? It's that new one, right?
Blackjack 2. No,
Blackjack,
it's just,
yeah.
Blackjack 2. Yeah. It's It's kind of typical. You know, it's got the BlackBerry style keyboard. It's got a little.
Are you just jaded?
Jaded?
Yeah. Maybe you're just jaded.
No, because maybe I'm just a jerk.
No. I just mean you see it all. No. You've used it all. Yeah. Maybe, you know, I feel that way sometimes. Like, it's going to have to be something pretty special to get me excited because I've seen it all.
So I put up with the things that don't work in the iPhone because it is such an incredible platform, right?
Yep.
In other words, it doesn't sync very well. Yep. With things outside the Apple world,
right.
Which is a problem. I don't have an Apple system. I don't run the Mac. I'm not interested in mobile me at all. I want to run my stuff. Well, you know, it's hard to integrate onto the iPhone depending on what you're running.
Right.
That's a little bit of a problem for me. Okay, fair enough. But I still put up with it, and I still do. I still jump through hoops because that thing still today. Here we are, what, year and a half later, whatever it is. Still by far the most interesting and exciting mobile platform that's out there by far. So, I can't say that I'm jaded about this thing. It's more realistic, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I look at this Windows Mobile 6.1 device is fine. Like I said, it works. It makes phone calls. You can, I can integrate my contact list into it, my calendar. Yep. It works. You know, I have to kind of use Outlook or whatever. I could use Exchange, I guess. Okay. Fine. It works. There's a bare bones media player. There's applications, whatever. You know, okay. But you know what? I would standing in line. I can do things. I can do these quick little computing things. I'll be at my kid's baseball game. He's not batting. He's not out in the field. I can look up something online. It's nice. It's a nice experience. Doing that on a Windows Mobile device is miserable.
Yeah.
It's the other stuff, you know. I mean, I want to run applications on the iPhone because they're so interesting. The games are fantastic. It would never occur to me to go look for an application for this thing because this doesn't feel like
true.
Feel like a thing. It's just a phone.
Yeah. Well, we're making a transition, and maybe Microsoft just is a little bit behind, but we are clearly making a transition to these being, the phone functionality is totally secondary. These are portable computing devices. That's why Android, to me, is exciting. It's a computer. The phone is not the key of it. Even the iPhone, it's really not being about a phone as much.
No, in fact, you know, some of the iPhone's failings, like the camera's lousy, which is too
terrible.
Bad because I think that going forward, these phones will replace our MP3 players. They will replace our digital cameras.
I agree.
They will become this thing. You know, you'll be able to scan business cards with them. They'll become this all-in-one,
very useful
portable extension to your computing experience. Yeah. It's wonderful.
Kind of purpose-built computers. You know, not quite so multi-purpose as our desktops. But you know, I mean, of course, I think you and I both agree the iPhone was nothing until third-party applications were available. You needed to be able to install applications. Functionality is everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I think Android is so interesting because in its present form, you know, the G1 that T-Mobile is putting out this month is not, you know, it looks like a regular smartphone, no big deal. The interface is some kind of weird desktop-y looking thing.
Yeah, and it's a little clunky, yeah.
Yeah, a little clunky. But, you know, that doesn't obscure the fact that the important thing that's going on here is this extensibility, the openness of the platform, the availability, the potential. Is very exciting, and on the iPhone, and it's made a big difference on the iPhone.
I ordered one right away, the G1 right away. Looking forward to it. I should get it. I'm hoping to get a review unit in the next week or so.
Yeah, I'm eager to see it.
Yeah, me too, as am I. But and you know, I do have to say, in HTC's defense, they designed it that they certainly have a lot of experience.
Yes, they do. Building Windows Mobile phones.
Right.
Almost.
I mean, the Mogul, the Tilt, these are good phones.
They're good phones. You know, I had a Tilt in here for a while. I reviewed that Celio. Remember the smartphone companion product, the little mini laptop?
Oh, yeah.
They had sent me I think
HTC?
It was an HTC Touch, I think is what. Was that a phone? HTC Touch?
Yeah.
Or Tilt?
They did a Touch. There's a Tilt and there's a Touch.
It was one of those. I don't remember.
They have a lot of them, but I think they're a very good manufacturer. I think they know what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, they certainly have years of experience. So.
Right.
But, you know, that's going to be the nice thing over time. Again, one of the other nice things over time is there'll be many phones from many makers on every wireless carrier. So you'll have a choice.
I think it's also possible because Android's free, because there will be a great ecosystem around it, that you will see it may become the de facto phone operating system.
Sure.
Why not? You know, Motorola hasn't. I mean, Nokia hasn't signed on, I don't think. But Motorola's making one. Everybody's making them now.
Yeah, yeah.
Be very interesting. I am excited about the platform, you know, it's a real interesting distinction between the closed unified Apple experience and the open and a little bit more anarchic Google Phone experience. And I'm very curious how that plays out. Hey, let's talk about, we're gonna get going because we've got your Audible pick, we've got your tip of the week, your soft of the week, but you tell me that a new Xbox experience is on its way. 1 month, November 19th. What is it?
Yes. Well, it's a new user interface. They're taking up some Apple lingo here. They're calling it, it's like getting a new Xbox. You know, you install the new system software and it looks completely different.
Oh, so that's interesting. In the past, all they've done is add blades and things. So this is like going to completely revamp it.
Yeah, I remember when they did the Blade UI, I had talked to them years ago, and they were saying, you know, this thing is really extensible and has legs, and, you know, we could make it run for years and years, and now they're saying, we've kind of run into the wall with that. And it's true, if you browse any of these screens, and you know how it is, you select an item, and then on the right, there's like this scrolling box where the text kind of slowly moves up so you can read what the thing is.
Yeah.
It's a little infuriating. So they're going to a new user interface there, and that's interesting. I mean, there's the avatar stuff, which is a lot like the Mii characters that you see on the Nintendo Wii.
Yeah.
I'm not particularly excited about, but whatever.
Yeah. That's for kids.
But I think the interface looks decent, and they've been putting out some screenshots of the thing, and you can really kind of get a feel for what it's going to be like. And I think it's going to be okay. I guess I'll be okay.
It's going to be okay.
I was worried about it. Well, the first thing, you remember the first day they showed this, they were really hyping up these little...
Yeah, like, that was Mii,
the avatars.
You're kidding.
And that's great. Because, you know, that's what that third-person shooter guy is looking for, is a little weeble guy, you know, to represent him online. You know,
It's not right. It was like they didn't understand their market. It was like they thought...
They're going after a much bigger market, and I think that's the thing. They're looking at the Xbox as a living room entertainment device. Yes, it plays video games, but it also does these other things, and they really want to push the media aspect of it. And I guess they're thinking this is more of an HD experience. It's more of a immersive looking user interface and so forth. It's something that will look better in your living room, and hopefully will be so exciting it will take your mind away from the horrible noise that the Xbox is making. Chokes to death under your stereo system. But
ultimately, Paul, it comes down to one thing. It comes down to the games. It has to. You can do all the UI design you want. Who sees the UI? It's just something in between playing games.
It is. That's right.
Right?
There you go. It's a temporary thing.
It's not something you want to live in.
I know. This has been a slow summer for games, but now the summer's over.
I'm excited. Little Big Planet's coming out on the PS3. That's going to be a... That looks to be what
I am going to buy a PS3 game this year. Resistance Fall of Man 2 is coming out this year.
That same,
which is really
a great game. So you have a PS3.
Yeah, I never tried. It's sitting there.
You're going to want to buy Little Big Planet. I mean, wait and see. I was wrong on Spore. I have been waiting for 2 years for Spore.
Yeah, everyone has.
And it looked like it was going to be great. And it's not compelling. It's like, okay. I don't feel like, I got to play another round. Now, maybe I'm getting old.
I grabbed it for the iPhone.
That's just a little part.
I don't think I've even looked at it.
I'm a little disappointed, I have to say. And but Little Big Planet looks really good. There's designing in it. There's puzzles.
I want to kill things, Leo. I don't want to design things.
It might be a little cutesy for you.
I'm looking at things like Gears of War 2, you know.
Yeah, baby. What else is coming along?
All kinds of stuff.
But it's Band of Brothers. What's that?
I think I wrote that down, and that's not actually the name of it, is it? It's I just forgot the name of it. It's a World War II shooter that's out now.
Oh, okay.
And I have completely zoned on. It's something very similar to Band of Brothers.
Okay.
Brother in Arms.
Brothers in Arms. That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
I need to pick that one up. But Dead Space, awesome looking sci-fi shooter. Left 4 Dead, which is from the guys who made Half-Life 2, looks awesome.
Valve's amazing. I think it was great.
Yeah. I just played through, the classic Duke Nukem 3D is on Xbox Live Arcade. That was a game I wasted serious amounts of my life on online.
Oh, I love it. And, its timing's perfect because isn't the movie coming out?
Oh, is there?
I saw a trailer, and it looked really, it was one of those superhero movies, and it was Duke Nukem.
Really?
Oh, no, it was Max Payne.
Max Payne was a great game, too, by the way.
Very similar. I loved Max Payne. He was Max Payne. Duke Nukem was a little more comic. I loved Duke Nukem. So is it it's the full Duke Nukem?
It's the original Duke Nukem. It's all the stupidity from 10 years ago, but it's It's a little long in the tooth. I mean, I guess, you know, it's like, damn, I'm looking good. You know, yeah.
I know.
So, but I did play the whole game through like an idiot because I love that stuff.
It was a great game. It was only 10 bucks when it came out. It can't be much more in the arcade. I hope it's not.
It's like, it's classic because back then, the big thing was Doom, the original Doom.
Right.
So this thing sort of 3D, but not really. So you could go up and down, but it was faked. And there's some comical special effects when you look around because it's fake. You know, it's not really 3D, but... yeah, you know, it was cool for its time. I mean, I guess I'd have to say it hasn't held up very well, but it's fun, you know, for a nostalgia thing.
Yeah, nostalgia's big. I see people, my son is all excited about going over to one kid's house because he has a Super Nintendo.
Nice.
And they play these old games, and he says, I love them. Yeah. I mean, it's not even nostalgia for him. I mean, this
Star
is
Fox, Firefly,
yeah,
whatever it was
before he was born.
Yeah.
And they're playing Mario and stuff, and he loves it.
Hey, my son came in and I was playing, I have to think about this, it was called, it's In TV Lives, like the Intellivision.
Oh, man.
On the Xbox 360, and I was playing Night Stalker, which is a classic game from my childhood.
Right.
And my son kind of came by and he sat down and watched this, and then he said, when I get up in the morning, can I play that?
Oh, see?
Sure.
It's always been about the game, not about the graphics. The graphics are very cool, but if it's a crappy game, it's a crappy game.
Yeah, yeah.
And if it's a good game, I think it could triumph over bad graphics.
Yeah.
A little bit, anyway.
No, absolutely. In fact, my software pick of the week is based around that theme in some ways. So we'll get there.
Halo 3?
Halo 3 Recon.
Recon.
Sort of a side game, not really a sequel. It's actually...
I'm surprised they didn't do that sooner. I thought they would try to cash in on that.
Yeah, it's not coming out until next year, so a year from now. That's interesting. But it's made by Bungie, which is important, I think. And... is a side story that takes place right before the events in Halo 3. So there's a single player campaign, and then there's also going to be some online stuff. And it doesn't require Halo 3, apparently. I guess it's a standalone game, so you can just throw that thing on there, and you know, you don't have to have the original. Although I would imagine everyone who buys it will have the original. You know, by that point, it will probably be free anyway. But yeah, that looks interesting. So.
And you say Steve Ballmer called the Xbox 360 an unqualified success.
Yes, he did. I actually wrote a story. I was so blown away by that statement, I actually managed to write an entire article about it.
In what world would that be an unqualified? I guess it's successful. I'd qualify it.
Hey, listen, this is the way I described it. You know, this is a system that is responsible for the single largest product recall in consumer electronics history.
$1 billion. Yeah.
It is a product that has consumed tens of billions of dollars of R&D that will never be paid back.
Yeah.
And it is a product that shipped over a year before its competition and will likely still come in last place in this generation of video games. So I suppose looked at in that light, you know, not so sure. But, you know, we'll see. They are making some steps to prop things up a bit. You know, this has been a tough year for the Xbox 360. I believe that they... we're actually outsold by the PS3 in 6 of the first 8 months of the year, which is kind of scary. Because
and then the Wii beat it.
The Wii's kicking the living, you know, the daylight
Wii,
out of it.
And then the Wii comes along out of nowhere.
That one was classic because no one saw that coming.
When
Nintendo unveiled the Wii, I think it was at E3, you know, 3 years ago, whatever that was now.
I think
everybody made fun of it.
Yeah.
You know, look, you can move the controller around. You know, and everyone's like, oh, geez, that's, these guys have lost it. And here they are, they're, you know, killing everybody. So, but, you know, Microsoft dropped the price of the Xbox 360 back in August, and the first sales results are out. And actually, you know, sales are up, monthly sales are up double in the U.S. They're up 62% month over month in Europe, and they're up 500% in Japan, which isn't saying much. I think they sell 12 units a month, but still, they've gone up dramatically there as well. And Japan is a market that Microsoft has historically done horrible in the video game world, because, you know, the other companies, of course, are from Japan. And I think understand that market in ways that Microsoft does not.
Right.
But, you know, who knows? This Christmas, I think, will be crucial for, I think, the outcome of this generation. There's no doubt that Nintendo is going to take the crown, right? I think we can accept that. But the big deal here would be retaining their number two spot. And if they could ever beat Sony and come in number two and have last generation's number one champion come in last place, that would be... quite the achievement, I think.
Well,
I don't see it. But.
Yeah. And is there going to be a third generation Xbox, you think? I mean, how soon before that happens?
I honestly, I'm sure there is, but I really believe
they've got to be working on it now, right?
Yeah, with the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3 especially, you have to think that these companies want to space out the releases as far as they can so that they can recoup as much as they can.
Yeah, that's true.
In product development, because the cost of creating these consoles was so high that they just hemorrhage money every single year. And they're really, you know, I think Sony had said basically, we need to sell this thing for 10 years just to break even.
Well, also, and developers, you know, it takes developers a while. We're only now just starting to see PS3 games that live up to the platform.
But there are still complaints on that stuff, by the way. Yeah. You know, there are games like I just read today, BioShock, for example, which shipped over a year ago or last year for the Xbox 360, is now coming out for the PlayStation 3. And people have played the demo. Well, they've been freaking out because it looks terrible.
Oh, compared
to the Xbox 360 version, yeah.
I played on Xbox and on PC, and of course, it looks fantastic on the PC.
Of course, as it would, yeah. Yeah, sure, of course. You know, video game consoles are frozen in time, you know, the first moment they're made, right? So the first year or two.
Even more so than they were.
Right. I mean, so for the first couple of years, you're not going to see games that can live up to the potential of the platform. And then finally, developers figure out how to take advantage of it. And for a couple of years there, you have that golden time period. We're still in that, I'd say, for the 360, where the games come out. And they're just unbelievable looking. Although I would say, you know, Gears of War 2, for example, will come out. It will look probably better than Gears of War, which is a fantastic looking game, but not that much more, right? I mean, I think we're hitting that part of the, you know, the lifespan where we developers understand it, but we've seen it all, you know, so as far as visuals go. But PCs, you know, PCs go up all the time. PCs are a moving target, so it's always going to be possible to do something much more incredible on a PC. So it wouldn't surprise me to discover that you could have a much nicer looking game with, say, BioShock or whatever, Crysis, which is not coming to the consoles, on the PC than you can on a console.
We're going to take a break. We're going to come back in just a second with Paul's tip and software picks of the week. But before we do, let us mention our good friends at Audible.com. You know I'm an Audible fan. I listen to Audible all the time, and I'm always plugging them. You have a pick. Actually, it surprises me just a little bit. Before we get to that, though, I do want to mention that Audible is doing something very exciting, and we'll have more information on this down the road. But they're doing this Metatropolis, which
I saw that.
Yeah,
I almost now this is the one where they're giving you a preview.
There's a just listen to Twit this week. Okay. Listen to Twit this week, and then we'll talk. Because I can't telegraph it, tell you yet, but it's I can telegraph it, but I can't tell you. But the idea is they got four of the great science fiction authors together to write novellas around, or maybe five, around a principle, around a universe that they all agree upon. Mm-hmm. And I'm listening to, I shouldn't tell you that. I have access to it, and it's incredible. So John Scalzi was the editor of this. And put together an amazing thing. And some of the best readers and a lot of, I think, three different actors from Battlestar Galactica. We had talked about me reading one of these, and I'm a little disappointed I get to, but the timing didn't work out. But this is going to be very exciting. But you have a pick, and I want to, so this is not available yet, Metropolis.
I looked at that, and the reason I didn't pick this was because it wasn't available. But as it turns out, I purchased the book in the past week, so I felt like that was a decent...
It won't be till October 21st. We'll talk a lot about Metatropolis next week when I have more that I can say about it. But let's talk about yours, because actually this is a great choice. But I am a little surprised because in the past, you and Randall Strauss, who is the author
Actually, I like Randall Strauss a lot. In fact, I think we had brought him up recently because he wrote something that was uncharacteristically out to lunch for him. He's usually very good, and he's written a book about Google called Planet Google, which looks excellent. I've just started it.
I can't wait to read it. He's a business professor at San Jose State, so he's like right there. Yep. He writes for the New York Times frequently about these subjects, and I agree with you. 90% of the time, he's absolutely right on. He's probably one of the most insightful guys out there. I can't wait to read this.
The reason I think this one's interesting, there are books out there about Google, right? I mean, they've been around for a while now. People have written stories, but the books that have come in the past have always focused on basically their rise to prominence and the things that brought them there, you know, things like search and advertising, which are basically what everybody knows about already. This book actually focuses on sort of the modern Google and what they're doing to turn into this, you know, cloud computing supergiant.
Right.
Someone that will or something that will compete with Microsoft in this next generation of platforms. There goes my phone again. Well, let me ask you a question. My phone is ringing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now I have turned off the ringer on this phone.
Yeah.
100 times.
Yeah. It's still ringing.
Why does it ring?
That's not the blackjack, is it?
No, it's the house phone, and I don't understand.
Well, it's not ringing in your office. It's ringing somewhere else, right?
No, it is ringing in my office, and this is what I'm talking about. I think I told you the story. My wife comes in here. She takes my phone.
She turns it on.
Turns it on. I don't know why she does that. She couldn't program the VCR.
Or it's running hyper. It could be running hypervisor.
I think it might be haunted. I don't know what's going on. I think on this podcast, I have turned off this ringer.
Every time,
50,
I think.
50 times. It still rings, yeah.
Yeah, every time so far. So I don't care. That's fine with me. I'm sure the audience.
I'm concerned about it.
I know our audience doesn't mind. So let's get back, though, to Randall Strauss. Randy Strauss's Planet Google, one company's audacious plan to organize everything we know. But you're saying it's more about the modern Google and where they're going with cloud computing.
Well, it's, in other words, past traditional search. So it's all the things they're doing online. That really what Google is about is not internet search. It literally is about organizing everything.
Oh, interesting.
And that's your personal information, you know, everything, you know, they want to, and the sort of, you know, almost innocent way in which they go about it, you know, that they, you know, we're going to digitize every book in the world. And then people say, well, whoa, hold on, what are you doing? What? And, you know, like copyright holders will come up to them and say, what are you doing? And they're honestly surprised to discover that anyone has a problem with this, you know, in their mind, you know, more data is better data. And that's universal. And they always seem to be confused when people have a problem with their sort of world domination things, which is interesting. So anyway, Google obviously is an interesting story and an unfolding story. So,
well, very good. Now, if you want to get this for free, it's very simple. All you have to do is go to Audible, audible.com/windows, and you can get this or any book in the 51,000 book collection at audible.com absolutely free. Stay tuned for Metatropolis. You may not have to pay for that. I'll just give you a hint. We'll give you the deals on the deal on that in a little bit, but that's on Twit. We're going to do that this Sunday. But meanwhile, I absolutely recommend that you check out Planet Google, one company's audacious plan to organize everything we know. I love Randy Strauss. I'm sure this is going to be I'm going to download it today. And that's the beauty of it. Once you're an Audible listener, the world is your oyster. Fiction, nonfiction, science fiction. It's so great. Audible.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support. Of the Windows Weekly Program. We thank you for supporting them, as I know many of you have. So, Paul Thrott, I think
yes,
it's
sir.
Time for your tip of the week.
Tip of the week. Okay. So, my tip of the week is, I just call it Think 60.
Get out of the stock market would be my tip of the week.
Yeah.
Tip of the year.
Day trading may not be the best option.
Oh, man. It just broke 9,000. Did you see that?
I don't.
Oh.
I can't balance my checkbook. I don't.
Yeah. I you know what? It's for me because I am out of it. I sold all my stocks a couple of weeks ago. But for me now, it's almost like, and I noticed that even at the gym and the club and stuff where they used to watch Golf Channel, now they're all watching CNBC. It's like fascinating to watch.
Yeah, it's
this.
A fixation. Sure.
It's a fixation. Between that and the election, it's like you're glued to the tube.
Well, good thing we'll have all these devices to keep us warm when we don't have jobs.
We may not have power.
You know. And we'll have to burn them in a pile.
Oh, boy.
We'll die from the chemicals.
Oh, boy.
So, anywho, as far as the tip goes, I think we've talked about this kind of thing before, which is, you know, obviously, it doesn't make a lot of sense for people with a 2 or 3 year old computer to upgrade to Windows Vista. No. But you will acquire Windows Vista as part of your next PC purchase. I guess what I'm saying in this tip is to take it to the next level. And think not just about Windows Vista, which you'll pretty much have to get, but actually look for a 64-bit version of Windows Vista instead. And this is one of the big things that's changed this year. We talked about this probably a few weeks ago, that suddenly this year, you know, the 64-bit versions of Windows Vista have become mainstream. You know, they're available everywhere. You can go into Best Buy or Circuit City or whatever and buy these PCs. If you go up to Dell.com or HDP.com, these PCs are available as an option. But the thing that's changed, of course, is now that they're very compatible with all of the 32-bit applications that are out there. They're very compatible with all of the hardware. And that's something that's really different than when Vista first shipped a year and a half or 2 years ago, when the X64 versions of Windows, the 64-bit versions, were not as compatible I would say that we've crossed that line. And not only should you consider it, but you should really just kind of go for it. And with an eye toward, you know, future proofing that purchase, because a 64-bit version of Windows, for example, can take advantage of all 4 gigabytes of RAM in a typical PC, whereas a 32-bit version only uses about 3 or 3.25 gigabytes of the available RAM. And what touched off this tip was two things, two articles I read in the same day. I woke up this morning, and like I do every day, I read the New York Times and I read the Wall Street Journal. And there was a, you know, Walter Mossberg once a week does this article where he responds to email. And I have never seen something so just horribly wrongheaded. And it was a question about the 64-bit version of Windows and whether I should use 32-bit Windows or 64-bit Windows, or, you know, 32-bit Internet Explorer or 64-bit Internet Explorer. And I don't think that he made a correct statement in this entire response. And honestly, contrary to what Mr. Mossberg has to say, not only are 64-bit versions of Windows in many ways better than 32-bit, but there's really no excuse anymore to worry about that kind of thing. And then, you know, I kind of got along with my day. Somebody forwarded me something from the Windows Secrets newsletter from Brian Livingston, and he has someone writing for him who basically just published a lot of hearsay from some readers who complained about Vista 64 not working. One guy described it as junkware.
What?
Possibly the worst, buggiest software that Microsoft has ever released.
So.
Oh, no, it's completely wrong.
Yeah.
And talked about things like, you know, Adobe Flash doesn't work in 64-bit version. Office 2007 is only a 32-bit application, as if this were some kind of limitation, you know?
Well, it would be if Flash didn't work.
It would be if Flash didn't work, but Flash does work.
But it does work.
In fact, I've
it's
been
just
using
not 64-bit.
Doesn't matter. That's the beauty of this.
Right.
I mean, I've been using Vista 64 since April, every single day. I use Flash every single day.
Right.
I use Office every single day. These things work fine.
How does it work? Is there an emulator for 32-bit programs? How do they work within 64?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it an emulator. They run natively in 32-bit mode. They run under a...
There's a mode.
Is a 32-bit runtime, essentially, yeah.
And when the 32-bit runtime is going, there's no performance hit, and other 64-bit programs still are 64-bit.
Absolutely.
Okay. See, that's not...
I mean, the reality in today's world is that there aren't many 64-bit applications, but I don't want you to look at that as some kind of weird limitation, because what would a 64-bit application give you exactly, right? Access to a flat linear address space, a 64-bit address space, I guess. But what kind of application would need that much memory, right? A CAD/CAM program, a high-end video application, I don't know what, maybe the next version of Photoshop, which will be 64-bit. You know, you don't have to have a 64-bit version of Office. If you did, Microsoft would have made one, and they probably will eventually, but there's no real advantage to it yet. You know, just having the underlying system running as 64-bits is an advantage, because you can run more applications, you know, because there's more available memory. But, you know, whatever. I was so incensed by this. I mean, I this is just such bad advice. It occurred to me that you could really take this in the complete opposite direction and say, not only is 64-bit Windows okay, but if you're buying a new PC, you got to get a 64-bit version of Windows. You're getting a new PC. It's going to work fine. I have never, I'm telling you, this entire year, I have yet... to run into an application that doesn't run on this thing.
So that's my question. Is there anything that you wanted to do you couldn't do at 64?
Nope, not once. I have never even thought about it. And that's what's beautiful about it, because I think it was back in July, Edbot wrote something about 64-bit versions of Windows, and I thought, that's interesting. You know, I've been doing this since April as well. I just stopped thinking about it. I have never run into those weird compatibility issues. It never happens.
Is there a reason, if you were content with 4 gigs of RAM, is there a reason to go 64? If you didn't want the extra memory?
As opposed to 32?
Yeah.
I think there are some small reasons. Nothing dramatic. You
it's
know,
not more 64, stable. It's not. It's a little more secure.
It's a little more secure. This is not something I can, you know, it's 9% more secure, 17, you know.
Well, you have to have signed drivers.
Yes, you
have to have 64-bit drivers, which should help stability. It has kernel protection, which should help.
Yeah,
and that's, by the way, the programs that didn't work initially were mostly antiviruses because they wanted to modify the kernel.
I would just say that if you have any, with the understanding that Windows 7 will be the next version of Windows Vista, and thus won't be the huge jump that Vista was over XP, if you have any inclination that you might buy a 2008, 2009 era PC and want to upgrade that thing to Windows 7, you should go Vista 64. Just go 64, because 64 is going to be the mainstream version of Windows 7.
And if you don't have 32-bit, if you don't have 64-bit drivers for some of your hardware, that would be a reason not to.
But in other words, you're getting a new PC, so the drivers are going to be on there.
Yeah, but if you have like the Microsoft fingerprint reader, as an example, which only has 32-bit drivers.
There are always going to be examples like that of something.
So you do want to be aware of that.
No software is perfect, but that's what I'm saying. In other words, you're getting a new PC. You know, yeah, you may tag along with some of your software from some of your hardware from before, your printer, your scanner, you know, things like that. Yes, I mean, there are going to be those examples. That's true of every version of Windows. I don't think that's a big difference. But, you know, for example, before this podcast, I plugged in this headset, which is different from the one I used last week. It has not been configured.
Yeah.
Yeah. It did a little, you know, futzing around there in the corner, and it works. I didn't have to do anything. I didn't think about it. I didn't plug it in and cross, you know, make the sign of the cross and, you know, sacrifice a, you know, an animal. It just works.
All right. First, you moved us to Vista. Now you're pushing a little harder. Now we're going to go to 64. We're trying to keep up with Paul here.
Next week, we're moving to the cloud, baby.
Yeah. You know, I think we might look back on these days agonizing about operating systems.
Yes.
In a few years and say, boy, that was silly, wasn't it? All you really need is a browser. Everything else is fine.
Which could be 64-bit, could be 32-bit. I guess that's your call.
Does somebody saying in the chat room that his flash won't work in IE on Windows 64?
It won't work on the 64-bit version, but by default, you're running the 32-bit version.
Of Internet Explorer.
Yeah, that's true.
So do you get both versions on Vista 64?
Yes, you do.
Okay.
And by default, you're running the 32-bit version. Again, it's something you don't have to think about. If you just go to the default browser, it's IE, it's the 32-bit version.
Got it. So really, what they've done here is they've got a very good 32-bit mode, as they did, by the way, when they went to 32-bit from 16-bit.
Sure.
That just handles it, and there are some examples of hardware drivers that haven't been updated from some manufacturers.
Microsoft is all about backwards compatibility. Oh, Anyone who has spent any time programming Windows, if you're familiar with the Win32 API, you'll know for a fact this thing was based on what is now called the Win16 API, which is a horrible piece of junk.
Right.
But, you know, to make it easier for developers moving along, they just kept it the same.
Sure.
So we've been saddled with this, I mean, spaghetti code looking, you know, disaster for a couple of decades now. But, you know, that's what Microsoft does. They keep things, they make sure things work.
Right. And
they keep
frankly,
the trains running on time.
And frankly, we've got to push, you know, people like Adobe to get their act together and put a 64-bit version of Flash out.
Sure. And by the way, Adobe is going to be one of the first mainstream software developers to come out with a 64 application, Photoshop.
I think a lot of Apple users are eyeing Vista 64 going, because they aren't going to do it on the Mac. Not right away, anyway.
Right.
All right. Time for your software of the week.
Yeah, this one's interesting. And by the way, I would point out 32-bit application runs fine on Vista X64.
We need a new sticker. Runs fine on 64.
And then it says, of course.
Of course.
So this one's kind of cool. It's also in keeping with our discussion about, you know, Xbox 360 games and shooters and so forth. This is actually, it's an open source first-person shooter. It's called Assault Cube. It's free.
Wow.
It is a 19 megabyte download. Which
it looks
is
pretty good. It looks like Call of Duty or something. It looks pretty good.
Yeah, I would say from a graphics quality standpoint, it's probably in line with Quake 3 Arena, which is not necessarily a new game by any standard, but still a great looking game. It's not that kind of a game. It's not a like a science fiction game. It's more contemporary with its, you know, the setting and weapons and so forth. It's along the mode of something like Unreal Tournament, where it's an online, or I should say a multiplayer only game. You can actually play the single player version, and it's you against bots. But the thing, it looks great. It runs faster than all get out. It's really neat. And you can hop online and play against other people.
I think it's so cool that it's open source.
It's 19 megabytes.
I'm downloading it. It took me 12 seconds.
It's like a Steve Gibbs game. You know,
it's an assembly language.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Wow, that it's open source kind of blows me away.
And, yeah, not that we necessarily serve this demographic, but I know there's a version for Linux, and there might be a version.
I'm downloading the Mac version. There is. And it's OpenGL, which is interesting, as opposed to DirectX. That's one of the reasons they could be open.
Cross-platform.
Cross-platform, yeah. Wow. And they say because of the efficient network coding, it'll run even on a modem.
Yeah, you can You can actually deathmatch online over on a 56K modem.
And it'll run on a P3 800 megahertz.
Sure. No, it runs great. I've been playing with it today on my system, which I'd like to again point out is a 64-bit version of Windows Vista. And it works fine. It works great.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And let's see. It does 1900 by 1200. I'm going to do it a little smaller. I don't want to kill this screen.
Can you show it?
It has full anti-aliasing, full what do they call it? Full. All right, let's start it here. Now, can you only play it online?
Well, you can play single player, but it's you against bots, you know, like computer controlled players, and that works fine.
Wow, pretty neat.
I like games that have a bot mode because it's a way to get into multiplayer.
This looks just exactly like.
Yeah.
Quake.
It's surprisingly nice. I mean, it may be based on an engine. I don't even know.
It certainly is. I'm sure it's an open source engine.
Yeah. It has that sort of look to it. But.
Wow. How do you shoot?
On a Mac? I don't know, you probably.
There's a map.
I use the mouse to shoot on the PC. I don't know.
Oh, I got a knife. I got a gun.
Grenades.
I got a knife.
Double pistol. Good stuff.
Oh, this is cool. I couldn't tell I was shooting because it didn't make any bullets come out. I guess I'll have to find somebody to kill. Then the blood will tell me I've shot them.
This thing you got into when you just start it like this is no one else there. So you have to.
Oh, no wonder it's so easy.
Yeah, hit escape, bring up the menu. You can choose single player or multiplayer.
Oh, I get it.
Choose single player, you can choose to play, you know, play against
I'm
bots.
I'm playing multiplayer. Oh, this is good.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make the bots be good. And I'm going to make there be eight.
Don't make them too good. Even good is pretty good.
Really?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh. This is fun. I guess I could turn up. Oh. Got him.
There you go.
This is fun. Okay. Hey, good free. Yeah. Good choice. I mean, you know, you could tell it's not quite commercial, but for the price.
We were paying big bucks for a game like this not so long ago,
exactly.
And, you know, if you're not exactly on the leading edge or whatever, you know, it's a great game. I mean, it's just...
I'm sorry. I don't know. Oh, they got me.
But you look at, like, you know, the Halo stuff that Microsoft's doing. There's a lot of movie stuff going on that's outside of the game, doesn't necessarily use the game engine. And, you know, it's this multi-million-dollar production and all that stuff. This is a game.
Yeah.
And it works great. It looks great.
Unbelievable.
But, yeah.
I just, you know, wow. It's Assault.
I didn't think this kind of thing was possible anymore. So I think this is neat.
It's exciting. Yeah. Assault.cubers, CUBERS.net.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And a great pick for, not just for Windows. For
Linux
and Mac as well. You're being very ecumenical.
Yes. I'm making a Linux software pick of the week. That's what I do.
First Hyper-V, now Linux. Where will Paul go next?
That's right. I spent $1,000 on this machine so I could run Linux in a virtual machine.
Why not?
It's free. And I just...
Paul Thurrott is the host of the Supersite for Windows. WinSupersite.com, a great place to go for tips, tricks, great articles. Look for him on the Windows IT Pro. He's a news director there. And, of course, his new book. It's out.
Oh, don't forget. Yeah, don't forget the giveaway this Sunday if you're around. Email me. It has to be... marked in my email for that time period, right?
From 10 a.m. to 10:15 Eastern. And it's it's Thurrott, Thurrott at gmail.com. You're going to get a lot of mail between 10 and 10:15 on Sunday morning.
Hoping I don't get a lot of mail outside of that time frame, but I will.
And then, of course, you know, it'll be really interesting. I think we have a smart audience, but this will be a very interesting test to see if they can follow instructions. And then if you follow Paul...
Which is really what this is all about.
Yeah. Can you follow instructions? If you follow Paul on Twitter, Thurrott at Twitter, then he will also announce another giveaway.
Based on the success of this one, that should follow shortly thereafter. Yes.
Immensely successful, I can tell already.
I hope so.
Paul Thurrott, thanks a lot. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.